Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by Ram Trucks. Guts, glory, Ram.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Somebody open the front door! Stevens Howling's coming in!
Oh, baby!
Wells runs over a defender, knocks his helmet off, and gets into the end zone for a touchdown.
From Cardinals headquarters in Tempe.
Adrian Wilson just ate his liver with fava beans and a fine Chianti.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Get your rear right back in the locker room.
You guys maybe aren't aware of all the powers that I possess over here, Paulie Pigskin, especially now that the regular season has begun. But Darren, I was actually reading your mind at this time a week ago, and I could sense, I could feel the vibe was such that you were saying to yourself, man, I need storylines. You know, after five preseason games, maybe that cupboard was a little empty and what was in there was a little stale. All that was left were maybe some of the ramen noodles, like, you know, in college. And, you know, you needed to go to the grocery store and stock up. So guess what?
That's not what I was thinking.
Storyline Santa showed up and showered you with gifts. Look at all the storylines here. Just 1 week into the regular season, going into week two. Darren Urban over there, Ron Wolfley here, Paul Calvisi, Mr. Jim Omohundro. Everybody nodding in agreement, right? Plenty of storylines to keep you going here on this edition of Cardinals Underground and azcardinals.com.
Where do you start, Paulie?
That's my question to you guys. Where would you like to start? We defer to Mr. azcardinals.com himself, Darren Urban. Darren, where are you starting?
Well, I mean, I would think the first thing you're thinking about is Kevin Cobb and the quarterback situation and, you know, John Skelton's ankle injury and, you know, the probability that Kevin's going to get another chance to play this week and just how he kind of finished that game. I mean, it's considering where we were a week before the Seattle game and John Skelton being named starter to where we were by the very end of the Seattle game and Kevin coming off the bench and not only leading a game-winning drive, but quite frankly, in my opinion, looking more crisp and accurate than I'd seen him maybe since we'd been here or since he'd been here, I thought for sure was part of the biggest storyline of the week for sure.
Well, let me say this. Had we not seen that a little bit before in the Tennessee game, you know, coming out there running the no huddle, of course, there were the two inexplicable interceptions, which Kevin would tell you. But, I mean, we did see success on that no-huddle drive that he had in Tennessee against the Titans, right?
No, absolutely. Look, I'm not going to deny at all that that is the biggest storyline, the fact that Kevin Cobb came in after the Seattle Seahawks had taken the lead 16-13, all appeared to be lost, and Kevin Cobb went bada-bing, bada-boom, right down the field, 6-for-8 on that possession. And played incredibly well. He looked like a different person to me, guys. He really did. He looked confident. He looked comfortable. His reads were spot on, and he threw the ball with accuracy. And there was one throw, the 22-yard throw down the middle of the seam to Larry Fitzgerald.
Ding.
That, I will tell you right now, was such an unbelievably good read. When you watch it on film, they brought Thomas down, the strong safety. They brought him down. He blitzed. They brought the Mike backer as well. Larod Stevens-Howling did a great job picking him up, but they bailed. It was a fire zone. It was the classic fire zone, and they bailed out a guy that was in the A gap, a linebacker who was hunting down Larry Fitzgerald. That throw to Larry was the second window, not the first window on the hot. It was the second window, which just shows great understanding of what you are faced with. That told me he was seeing the field beautifully. An unbelievable throw to Larry Fitzgerald. So there's no denying that Kevin Cobb was a story. But for me, guys, I just want to say preseason is preseason, isn't it, Russell Wilson?
Well, and that's the thing. In the preseason, what were we saying about Kevin Cobb? He looks indecisive. He's hesitating. But he was anything but on that one drive. Like you said, Wolf, he got out there, he was very decisive. He seemed to be seeing the coverage. He seemed to be going through his reads, his second, third, and fourth receivers.
Comfortable in the pocket as well.
I just wonder if there's something liberating. And he sort of hinted at this in front of his locker on Monday, right, Darren, where he said, you know what? You get to the point where you've got nothing to lose. You've got nothing to lose. Go out and wing it. You're just playing instead of thinking and stressing and worrying about every single rep might factor into this QB competition.
For the first time when he came into that game, since he's been a member of the Cardinals, he wasn't the starter. I mean, every other time we could be talking about the competition, but let's face it, even going into the competition, even Coach Ken Wisenhunt had dropped some, not even hints. I mean, he basically said, we'd like for Kevin to win this competition. That didn't mean he would, but they wanted him to. There was always that on him, and it was like the balloon had been popped a little bit when he lost the starting job. I mean, at that point, what was anybody else going to say anymore? I mean, everybody was already saying, hey, you're a failure. You've lost the job. You came here to be the guy, and now you're not. So I agree with you. I think there's a certain amount of pressure that's taken off. Now, I think that shifts a little bit up in New England if he's playing again, because now everybody's kind of watching him under a microscope again, and you're going against a really good team that didn't give Chris Johnson anything on the ground last week, so, and your running game's already kind of struggling, so you wonder how much that's going to be able to help you. You know, if he struggles again this week, you know, he's going to hear it again. But I agree that there was a certain amount of pressure relieved from him once he lost that starting job.
And Wolf, having spent 10 years in a locker room, answer me this, because this is an honest, genuine question about the locker room dynamics. And I bring this up because Kevin Cobb offered a little insight to us in the post-game interview on the radio side, the Cardinals radio network, that I don't think he said anywhere else. And he said, you know, I don't think I had to prove something to the locker room, but ... And he went on to say, it felt good to go ahead and pull one out on behalf of my teammates. And I took that to mean, if there were any doubters in the locker room, at least I think I reiterated that to these guys that I can play the game.
Paul, no, you're right on the money right there. You know, again, think back to the situation. The Cardinals had a 10-3 lead at halftime, and John Skelton had managed this offense beautifully. To me, that first half for the Arizona Cardinals, that's exactly how they're going to have to win games, in my opinion. And if that means running into the eight-man front, running into the pile, then so be it. But the fact that the third quarter was such a disaster, and then suddenly you're down in this game. You've led for the vast majority of this game, and then suddenly you're down 16-13. Your quarterback goes down. He's laying there in the end zone. Looks like it's over. And then suddenly here comes Kevin Cobb. And as I said, bada bing, bada boom, down the field, you score a touchdown. The confidence that has to give Kevin Cobb, I don't think can be measured by human hands. And the confidence in that locker room now when they look at him in that situation, that was a dicey situation to be thrown in. That's the worst situation. Oh, by the way, Kevin, it's the fourth quarter. We're down by three. I mean, you write this stuff in Hollywood. And just the reaction of the guys on the field. Did you see the reaction of the guys on the field after Kevin Cobb hit Andre Roberts for that touchdown? It was interesting. They didn't run over to Andre Roberts. They turned, and everyone was running towards Kevin Cobb, including Andre Roberts. I mean, this to me, that spoke volumes. The once and future king, maybe, back in the locker room.
I can always tell on the sideline, because 98% of the time the defense always sits. They always sit. You know, they're resting up. Doesn't matter. But, you know, they were out there watching from the very beginning. That very first snap, they were on the sidelines. They wanted a front row seat.
You know, Darren College told me this week, and I'm paraphrasing. It's in my story on azcardinals.com. But basically he said, the perception of Kevin from the fans and the perception of Kevin from the media is different than the perception of Kevin in this locker room. And he went on a little bit longer than that, but I do believe that. And part of that is because of we're human beings. I mean, Kevin Cobb is a good person, and I think guys like him. And you want production, and it is a professional game, and, you know, if you're not playing well, obviously, you know, guys are going to want somebody who's producing out there. But the bottom line is, that doesn't mean you don't root for a guy on a personal level, and I think that's what you saw a lot of.
All right, so the running game, what were your takeaways there, Wolf? And it doesn't surprise me you talked about the eight-man box, because before the game, I had both John Skelton and some of the coaches tell me the key to this game, beyond turnovers, is we're going to have to run into that eight-man box to keep him honest.
Ding, 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 ding. You got to do that. And I think the Arizona Cardinals will continue to have to do that despite Kevin Cobb playing quarterback. You just can't go no huddle the whole time. You just cannot do that. You don't understand what you're saying if you say we got to run the no huddle and do it do it exclusively. You don't understand what you speak of.
The and reason Ken wasn't going to answer that, by the way. He said, if nothing else, it renders you one-dimensional.
It's teams
ridiculous. Can instantly scheme against you.
It's just ridiculous. You've got to use it as a change-up. But, you know, again, I look at that first quarter and the fact that you're playing a team that plays very, very well in the box. The Seattle Seahawks are a strong team and number 9 defense in the league last year. The Seahawks, they've got a good, solid front seven. And then you walk that eighth man down into the box. They love that. Sometimes you've got to sacrifice. You've got to run into the pile. You can't continue to check out, because if teams know you're going to check out, oh, by the way, John Skelton, Kevin Cobb, you guys have struggled. Oh, first and 10 rundown situation, we'll just go ahead and we'll give you an 8-man front because we know you're going to check out. And that means you're not handing the ball off to Beanie Wells, somebody we've got a great deal of regard for, or Ryan Williams, same deal. We're going to make you, John Skelton, Kevin Cobb, we're going to make you beat us, and it's easy. What we'll do, we'll just walk down into the box, you'll check out if you had a run on, and here we go. But you can't do that. You've got to sacrifice. You've got to run into that 8-man front, and then you keep play action alive by doing that. And you've got to be three-dimensional. When you've got a quarterback that is struggling, like we've had our quarterback struggle here, you've got to keep them three-dimensional, not one-dimensional.
And it'll be interesting this weekend, as I briefly mentioned before. The Patriots gave up 20 yards on 16 carries against Tennessee. Chris Johnson had 4 yards rushing on 11 carries. I mean, this is a team that, you know, they got Wilfork in the middle. Obviously, Belichick's a defensive genius. I don't think anybody's going to argue that. You're in a situation where they've managed to bring in some pieces to build back that defense where it had been struggling the last couple of years. And they, at this point, look like they can be pretty good against the run.
All I've heard is a bunch of talking heads raving about this revamped Patriots defense.
Yeah.
I've seen at least 3 power polls and now have them number 1 after week 1, right, with the Niners number 2, all these power polls one game into the season. But, you know, you talked to Bill Belichick this week on the radio, Wolf. Did he give you at least maybe a portion of his game plan? What do you offer up?
No,
come on.
Not at all. He didn't give me anything I like see. That. You know that, Paulie. Yeah. But I will say, in regard to Tennessee and Chris Johnson and running the football, and they really struggled last year. Tennessee struggled to run the football last year.
Go especially look at out
they
of
averaged,
eight.
Yeah. They averaged under 4 yards a carry. Wow. When you talk about the Tennessee Titans running the football, which was mind-boggling to me. And if you watch the game film,
have you done that, Wolf?
With your iPad,
oh, boy.
If you watch the game film, you'll see here are the New England Patriots on first and 10. Guess what? They're still a big cover 2 team, which is not a great defense to stop the run. You're keeping 2 safeties high. Now, they will come down and walk him down every now and then, but they're still playing. Bill Belichick has always been a big believer in the cover 2. They're running a 4-3 defense. They're not giving you a bunch of 8-man boxes. They didn't give Tennessee a lot of them in game 1. In Tennessee, they've got some nice running backs. I think we'd all agree. They wanted to run the ball better, especially with Jake Locker as their quarterback. That did not happen. Bill Belichick is going to give the Cardinals, in my opinion, he's still going to give them a lot of cover 2 on first down. This is something rarely people do in the league, play a lot of 2 on first down. But the Patriots and Belichick has always done that, which means you've got to be able to run the ball. They got to run the ball against that. If a team is going to play cover 2 against you and keep 7 in the box, you got to be able to run the ball and run down situation, first and 10, second and 1-6.
By the way, the only brand that's getting mentioned here at Cardinals Underground would be, we are presented by Ram Trucks, Guts, Glory, Ram, just to reiterate that here on azcardinals.com.
And why am I whispering, by the way? It's just this room. We're in this, man, this is the ultimate underground, isn't it?
I need all this soundproofing at my place for the 2 little kids. Can I borrow all this egg carton soundproofing and just bring it home with me? Could I do that possibly?
Next point, Paul.
Yeah, that would be the Cardinals defense, because I know Bill Belichick in the interview basically named every member of the defense.
Oh, my goodness.
And he not only did he speak at length, but he spoke in glowing terms of the Cardinals defense. Maybe some takeaways from game number 1 there, Darren.
You know, real quick, I'm going to give you the takeaways, but It's funny you mentioned everything of it, because of this morning on the conference call with Coach Belichick, somebody asked him just to talk about the running game of the Cardinals, and he basically gave a 5-minute dissertation, which got to the point where he talked about Beanie and Ryan Williams by name, and then he brought up Lerod Stevens-Helling, then he brought up William Powell, then Weepo. He brought up Anthony Sherman. He knows his stuff. But
did he go back to Terry Metcalf?
Defensively, I mean, obviously the Cardinals leaned on those guys last week, and we talked about the struggles the offense had in the third quarter. If it hadn't been for the defense stopping the Seahawks on some very short fields and holding them to field goals, that the Kevin Cobb storybook ending wouldn't have even mattered. And I saw a couple guys. I mean, it was funny. There were points in the preseason because of his ankle injury and because of the way maybe Stuart Bradley was playing or looked like he was playing that. You know, I had some people ask me, well, do you think Paris Lennon with his salary might be a casualty? And I didn't see it. And then you saw why on Sunday. I mean, I thought Paris Lennon had an excellent game, awesome. As usual. He's been such a rock for this team since he showed up, better than anybody could have ever guessed, and I think that includes the coaches. I thought Darnell Dockett had one of his better games he's had in a long time. Missed a couple of tackles, yep. Should have had a couple sacks. But his motor, the penetration, the discipline he showed on a few plays with Russell Wilson, I thought was excellent. And I think when you get kind of plays like that, I thought Darrell Washington was all over the field, especially early. I thought they were moving in the right direction with some of the right people.
You know, when I see Paris Lennon meet Marshawn Lynch in the hole, that to me is the epitome of the NFL, of a man's game. When those two guys square up and lock up, I mean, first I wince on the sideline, then just realize, man, those are two ultra-tough guys.
Yes. Just,
I said to Paris Lennon in the post-game interview, I said, if you were running back, you would be Marshawn Lynch. You guys are like the exact same, you know, sort of mold, just on opposite sides of the ball.
Yeah, and I realize the Seattle Seahawks ran the ball for over 100 yards in this game, okay? But to me, I thought that was key. They mitigated. They really did control Marshawn Lynch. Did a very, very nice job against that, because that is going to be centric to what the Seattle Seahawks do with Russell Wilson as their quarterback. Talk about three dimensions. Again, three dimensions. Let me say that again. Running it, throwing it, and using play action. That's what I mean by a three-dimensional offense, and they're going to have to use that. They're not just going to be able to line up Russell Wilson and just go ahead and say, you know what, we're going to spread the field and throw the ball all over the place ad nauseum. That is not going to happen. But again, my point about the preseason. If you talk to the Seattle media, oh my goodness, Russell Wilson, they had crowned him king. They had crowned him king. There was no doubt. They were laughing at our quarterback situation. At least our quarterback had started 8 games and won 6 of them. That's all I knew. Yet they were laughing at our quarterback situation. You're starting a rookie who's never played one game, not one regular season game in the National Football League. And their confidence, it was in abundance because of Russell Wilson. 62.5 quarterback rating. Okay, now look, John Skelton after 3 quarters didn't have that. Okay, I get that. My point is this. Don't ever pretend that preseason is a good indicator, especially when you're talking about a quarterback. It's not a good indicator for what kind of year or what kind of season he's going to have. Period.
And we hashed that out in the Cardinals quarterback competition, did we not? We had that conversation right here on azcardinals.com about, wait a minute, you're going to decide on a quarterback, but to what degree is it an accurate gauge when you're going against vanilla defenses in the preseason?
Which is why you had to take into account practice.
Circling back to what Wolf was saying about the multi-dimensions. I mean, I think the Cardinals defense did a great job on Marshawn Lynch. They've got double the trouble now with the Patriots, because I think they found a running back in Steven Ridley who had a very good game last week. Seems to be, after all this time, maybe an answer. I don't think he's ever going to be Adrian Peterson, obviously, but they like him up there. He's had a lot of buzz about him, and he performed very well in the first game. And then you add into it what they do offensively through the air, which is just ridiculous with the weapons they have and what Tom Brady can do and the choices he makes. I mean, they scored, 31 points, 34 points, whatever it was, against Tennessee, and it didn't feel like they really did that much offensively. It was kind of weird.
Supposedly,
I think it's their offensive line.
That's what I was just going to say.
Okay.
Reportedly, supposedly, allegedly, the offensive line is weak, or is there a weak spot?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, look, I think the blueprint for beating Tom Brady and the New England Patriots has been established in the National Football League, and that is the ability to rush four and drop seven. Let's face it, you know, you can talk about New England and running the football, and that's great. I get that. It's still about Tom Brady. This is still about Tom
Heck
Brady
yes.
and stopping Tom Brady throwing the football. Those two tight ends, Rob Gronkowski, they got Aaron Hernandez, they got Wes Welker running all that short to intermediate stuff that'll just fry you with Tom Brady dissecting your defense. The challenge is going to be, will the Arizona Cardinals be able to generate pressure, a four-man pressure, and drop seven and get pressure on Tom Brady? Now, you can scheme it, but the Cardinals don't have four guys that you can just line up and say, go get the quarterback. Okay, now, because of the offensive line problems the Patriots have had, maybe Calais Campbell, maybe Darnell Dockett, because I agree with you, Darnell Dockett was fabulous,
yes.
especially in the second half against Seattle. So maybe you can get this interior push suddenly because their offensive line has been a problem. But I don't think the Cardinals have four guys they can line up and say, go get Tom Brady.
And this is a quick aside, but you keep talking about the offensive line and the weakness. And I just have to throw this in because this is a pet peeve of mine, like your thing with the preseason. Again, this is why this is a quarterback-centric league, and that's why when everybody's talking about the issues the Cardinals offensive line has, which they have, there are no question there are issues, and D'Anthony Batiste had his rough times in that first game for sure. But when you have a really good quarterback, it's not completely minimized, but it's definitely minimized. The Patriots scored 34 points or whatever and won handily with a quote-unquote weak offensive line. The Giants won a Super Bowl with a quote-unquote weak offensive line. If you have the quarterback play back there, the offensive line doesn't mean nearly as much. That's
ball comes out quickly, yeah. doesn't it?
But, you know, if you think back the games where Kurt Warner struggled, it were the teams that would rush 3 and 4, drop 7 or 8. He'd beg you to blitz him.
Yeah.
Because he was very confident he could pick you apart and find the open man.
Great point, Bullet.
I would assume that's the same deal with Tom Brady. So you get that.
Yeah, and that's why, again, it goes back to that four-man rush, being able to rush 4, drop 7, and get pressure on Tom Brady. That is the key. Now, will Ray Horton be able to scheme that? I don't know. We're going to see.
I'm curious where Tom Brady goes with the ball. You know, Bill Belichick, in his discussion with reporters, immediately started talking about the athleticism and the size in the Cardinals' secondary, which I think sometimes, I know I do, it's kind of take for granted. But you're right. If you're looking at the Cardinals' secondary from afar, Adrian Wilson, Kerry Rhodes, you know, Patrick Peterson, just the skills and athleticism.
You're right. Although I'm going to say that after listening to him talk about a few things about the Cardinals on the conference call and even listening to some of Wolf's thing, you know, the Cardinals should be 15-1 and going to the Super Bowl if they were as good as Bill yeah. Belichick kept saying. And that's okay.
Holtz-isms in there.
I felt that way a little yeah. bit, yes.
I will say, because Bill Belichick was my coach in 1992 and 93 when I was playing for the Cleveland Browns, and I will say that he tells you exactly the way that it is. He will tell you the way that it is, but he has a tendency of focusing more on the positive when he's in front of the media, of
sure.
course, exclusively
right.
on the positive. He would have told us exactly everything we needed to know about Adrian Wilson and Kerry Rhodes and Patrick Peterson in glowing terms. He says it the way that it is, but then he would have offered up, here's where we can beat them. And that's quite a
different
sound. So
he gave us the abridged version. Is that what you're saying?
Indeed.
Redacted information.
He gave you the public version.
Can you get the full uncut version on that iPad, Wolf?
For example,
the Department of Defense approves.
Yeah, he got up in front of the entire team, and he told us, you know, about Chuck Cecil. He said, look, this guy, if he gets you into a phone booth, he's going to destroy you. Chuck Cecil will hit you. And then, of course, he followed that up by saying, oh, by the way, if he happens to tackle you in the open field, I will fine you $500 if he tackles you in the open field. And everyone understood his meaning. He came into the running back room to reiterate what he said in front of the team. This is what I'm talking about. He dissects not only schemes, but personnel to a degree and to a point that I never in my 10 years of playing in the NFL ever experienced it. Meticulous, going into minutia when it comes to a football team. That's Bill Belichick. Probably too much information.
All right, so as we bring this home on the Cardinals Underground presented by Ram Trucks, Guts, Glory, Ram. Speaking of film rooms, what do you think Kevin Spencer had to say to some of the cover teams after game number one there in Aaron?
Well, you know, Leon Washington has always been a pretty good return guy. So
true.
There is a part of me, just like Patrick Peterson getting loose. I mean, sometimes that's a talent, but that can't happen. And when you're on a team, again, built on – looks like going to be built on defense, that looks like it's going to be built on an offense that hopefully doesn't make a whole lot of mistakes and doesn't beat you as it kind of grows into whatever it might grow into, you can't lose in the transition game, because if you do, you're really in a bad spot. You're in a bad spot, and that's what I kept thinking when both those returns happened. Quite frankly, during the game, I was like,
short field.
They're doing everything they should be doing, and then in the special teams, they blow it by giving up a crease there. And it seems like it was creeping up a little bit in the preseason again on some of those coverage things, and a little surprising to me. But they definitely have to clean that up.
It's Wolf, you know, Guts, Glory, Ram. You're in your glory when you hear Darren, you know, say transition.
Transition.
One day after.
I mean, that's what it is, right?
Your interview with Coach Belichick. So you've been in your glory for a good 48 hours.
And he's watching film on his iPad.
And he's watching film. This is your week, Wolf.
This is. And also, I'd like to apologize to Chuck Cecil. All right. I mean, Chuck, I love you. He was a strong, hard player. He just wasn't a good open field tackler. And I think Chuck would tell you that.
Can Coach Belichick, by the way, with your personal relationship, can you get me a couple of tickets for a couple of buddies I have in the Boston area? Yeah. Can you make that happen, Wolf?
No. Yeah. No, Paul.
No.
No.
No wicked chance.
I wouldn't even know. I would not even ask.
How would that go if you asked Coach Belichick for a couple of comp tickets? How would that go?
I wouldn't ask him. It wouldn't go anyway. Yeah, you're not listening. I wouldn't ask him.
He'd put the hood over and just ignore you as he'd go into it.
He would, too. Yeah. Or say something incredibly sardonic.
All I know is the weather forecast is quite different than our last trip. And as the sideline guy whose feet were frozen and soaked before kickoff. And then everybody went in at halftime. And I had to sit out there and do the halftime report while everybody's inside getting warm.
Yeah.
And then you're on the outside of the box, and between the 30s. So you're on the outside. And all the blowers are pointed in. So it's sort of like you're standing at the river and you haven't had a drink of water for like 5 days. But you can't lean over and get a drink.
Yeah.
That was like one of the worst sideline radio pencil neck games ever. Just to put it, just to share, not that you guys really cared. Just a little Pauly postcard from the last time we went to Foxborough.
You know, by the way, we're staying in Providence. Did you know that?
I did know that.
I will tell you, they are. Providence has some of the finest Italian cuisine on the face of the planet.
You went to Wikipedia?
That's what a lot of people don't understand about Providence.
See, I thought you were going to start propping up because of the American history as a history buff there. Well,
no, not at all. But Joey Bag of Donuts, believe me, it's alive and well in Providence.
We'll go to the Italian restaurant with you. I will not go to one of those museums you like to frequent on those Saturdays of the road trips on the East Coast. So that's
yes, we will.
Okay, there we go. Here we go. This is week two. And once again, Cardinals Underground presented by Ram Trucks, Guts, Glory, Ram. For Darren Urban, Ron Wolfe, and Paul Calvisi, Jim Omohundro pushing the buttons. And this will now be the stop button on azcardinals.com.
Here we go.